okay, we need to make sure we're teaching our leaders how to actually manage in this remote work environment. And I think that's really helpful. Second thing I'd say to close on the pandemic piece is the understanding employee well-being, isolation, those sorts of things. And I think you do have to think about that in your benefit plans to ensure that you have a well-being initiative so that it's not just about keeping costs down and making sure people are under care of a primary care physician, but offering them the connectivity to the company and also to their behavioral health experts, if you can afford to put that into your program, finding a way to increase the capability there, because I do think people can have a tendency to feel isolated if you don't have a great program internal to the company that's keeping people connected and then have access to some healthcare opportunities for them as well.
Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR Podcast, the podcast where we explore the cutting edge trends shaping the future of HR, people operations, and generally the way we work. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, founder and CEO of Cleary. If you're looking for insights into how technology and specifically AI automation and many other factors are transforming HR, empowering teams to be more strategic, efficient, and impactful, you've come to the right place. And today I'm honored to welcome David Dart, the Chief People Officer at Calibre Holdings Corporation. He's an HR leader with over 20 years of experience driving strategic HR leadership, interestingly, across various industries. So the career David has had has gone through HR roles at companies like Terminix and Veritas Technologies, where he's led global talent management, compensation programs, organizational transformation. And notably, David is a veteran of the U.S. Navy and brings a unique perspective on leadership and operational experience. So with no further ado, David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Thomas. Great to be here. Thanks for asking me to join you.
Absolutely. In a previous conversation, we were just talking about your perspective on your own career and the way you think about how it can evolve. And you talked about learn, earn, and return. So could you tell me a little bit about that as a way to kick off the conversation?
Yeah, you bet. So I had a great mentor earlier in my career that was like talking to me about, think about your career in three phases, because there's an element of when you first start your career, you want to move as quickly as you can. And he's looking, it should be in three phases, learn, earn, return. And he's learn as much as you can earlier in your career and build this great foundation, make some lateral moves, take some risks into roles that you don't know anything about it, and make some mistakes and learn as much as you can and get that great foundation, which will allow you to then shift. And he talked about it in ages too. It's like between when you're like 38, 40 at 50 years old, you really have the earn phase where you're leveraging all the experiences that you had and you're trying to drive as much, especially if you're ambitious, so you're trying to take on more challenging roles, rise in the organization. And it's an opportunity to put your marker out there of how much you're going to be earning between kind of your 50-year-old and then your retirement age. So you really want to make sure you're leveraging all those experiences you had before. And that was the element of go slow now to go fast later when you're learning, because go slow now, but you're really going to rise. And exactly what he said would happen did happen, because I did move up quickly and financially it ended up being a very positive thing for me. But then you get into return. So I'm in that phase right now, which is take all the things that you've had, the learning that you have, but also the experiences, the scars that you have. And it's an opportunity to now start to teach an organization or mentor people, or maybe take your skills to a not-for-profit and return all those things that you learned. You can also, yes, you can write checks and do that financially as well. But there's such a big impact you can have by sharing your experiences, being a mentor, dedicating some of your skill sets to a not-for-profit. And so I'm in that kind of phase now, which is why I agreed to jump on here. Because if there's anything I can offer for anyone in their earlier mid-career, I'd be happy to share some of the hard knock stories and some of what I learned over my time.
That's amazing. To start with in that direction, could you just tell us about how you got into HR to begin with?
Yeah, it's funny. Most of us don't grow up unless maybe there was an HR person in the house saying, I'm going to be a human resource professional. So I ended up in the Navy. I loved it, but I wanted to leave because I had a young family and I didn't want to go to sea again. I had been to sea and that was at shore duty. And I left the Navy and I ended up business school. And I picked the business school because it was a general manager business school and I wanted to be the CEO of Enron. It didn't work out for a variety of reasons, but all probably positive. But I got there and I didn't know what I was going to do because I looked at finance, I looked at marketing, I looked at investment banking, and I looked at consulting. And neither one was resonating with me because I really wanted to lead people. And I kept hearing from C.K. Prahlad, who was one of the strategy professors at Michigan. And he said, people are the only true competitive advantage. And I thought about my last job in the Navy, why I loved it so much is because I was running the Navy's largest bulk petroleum facility in Europe. And we have 55 local nationals, 16 military, 4 U.S. civilians. Each employment group thought the other one was a bunch of idiots. Getting them to work together as a high-performing team was the most rewarding experience I had, because we were not a well-run operation when I first got there, but left with recognition as the Navy's best fuel facility in the world. So you did that through people. That was done through great leadership coming in, connection with the team. And so I said, that is true. Why don't I try HR? So I tried that. And first couple roles as an individual contributor when you're a leader were rough. But that transition has been like, look, if you're a business-oriented HR person, you can have a big impact on a company. And that was really where I knew that I really found my home in HR. But it wasn't instant when I tried it out, because you tend to grind through those individual contributor roles. But it's really turned into a great career.
So your first role out of business school was in HR? Or okay, so directly, and then you stayed with it. But then you've ended up working in different industries, right? So it's after post-Navy and post-business school, you've kept the function pretty clear, but then you worked in different industries over that time. Could you share some perspective on, I guess, how you went into different industries and also what you see as similarities or differences between them, especially from an HR perspective?
One of the great things about having an HR career is that you do have the ability to move from industry to industry. And my advice would be, don't just bring a playbook from one industry to another, and we can get into that. But the idea is that having worked at biotech, semi-durables, consumer packaged goods, chemical manufacturing, enterprise software, pest management solutions. So there's so many different things that I've done. It's created a lot of excitement in going to work every day, because you're learning every time you come into a new industry, because there's a lot to learn. You really have to understand, how does this company make money and how can I add value through the HR function? As an HR professional, where do I sit that I can actually deliver value for the organization? Otherwise, I'm useless overhead. That makes it interesting. It's exciting to be in this function, in part because you can move industries and there's interesting problems to solve. Learn what you can in one industry. Some of what you have in one industry may in fact apply to another, but it might not. So you don't just come in with a solution. And so that's made my career really interesting and keeps me motivated.
That's really interesting. Do you have any examples that come to mind of something that you were able to take from one industry to another as a practice versus something that was, you had to basically reinvent the playbook or had to redo it from scratch as you went into a different industry?
I think we're kind of experiencing it. One of the best examples is right now. Moving from pest management, which I didn't know anything about, but I was at a services organization at Ecolab. Moving from pest services to automobile services, I don't know anything about collision. I'm not really an auto guy. I like to drive them, probably too fast, but I didn't know anything about this industry. And it's a very unique industry. It's on the corporate maturity curve. It's still a little bit further behind some of the other auto adjacent industries, because our company, Caliber, is really far ahead of the competition. We're 1,800 locations. You'd have to put the next 6 or 7 collision center by size to reach our size. But we're only 5% of the center count in the United States. There's 35,000 independents and other smaller multi-service organizations, multi-locations. We're well ahead, but the industry hasn't gotten to these big companies where you're putting a scalable platform together and doing trainings. But the principles of scalable platforms at a multi-unit service company where you have the frontline teammates are the ones who are delivering all the shareholder value. The key skills and abilities of our frontline are what determines the success or failure of the organization. And so if you're a human capital person, you're going to want to be in a model like that, because you can have an outsized impact on the overall success of the organization. And so again, the first few things, I didn't have a playbook from pest services. Doesn't apply directly. That's a route-based business. We have 1,800 locations. So a lot of these things are different. But the principles around doing training at scale to make sure that our 5,000 or so service advisors, estimators are well-trained, so they write accurate estimates, which drives body tech retention, which is critically important. It also drives the profitability of the center. But delivering that at scale at 1,800 locations, that's not something that we were highly effective at when I got here. So that was one of the first things we started to work on, was how do we make sure that we're helping and inspiring every teammate to reach their full potential through effective training capabilities and drive down turnover. At prior company, our technicians were attriting. You'd hire 10, you'd lose 7. you implement these training practices at scale, you reduce that first 90-day turnover substantially. You all of a sudden start increasing the productivity of the organization. So they're all interrelated. And the same principles applied at Terminix that apply here, which is design great training solutions, deliver those effectively at scale, monitor the quality of the training and monitor the KPIs that you were after, and then make sure that you have up training capabilities to increase their capability over time. Because you don't just train them for 6 weeks and then drop it. You got to monitor their capability at scale, make sure that you're providing up training on the key capabilities that you want to drive, and then do that virtual instructor led. Some of the training in the early days should be in person, but virtual instructor led or in person with certified trainers at scale. So those apply in both scenarios. The other thing that's interesting is recurring revenue. So understanding the importance of recurring revenue in the software industry, that was helpful in understanding how Terminix, why it was so highly valued. That is a recurring revenue model. Yes, it's not enterprise software. The cost of switching isn't as high, but man, once you get on that flywheel where you're delivering great service and you have customer retention above 90%, you're just printing money. That's why those businesses are so valuable and so well run. That helped me understand quickly what the model was of success. We had to make sure that we retained customers. And I understood the reason why, and oftentimes you do that by retaining technicians.
Okay, there's so many different threads to pull on there, David, but one observation you made there was from an HR practitioner's perspective, think about going into companies where the people as inputs are high leverage for the business outcomes of the organization. If you put it that simply, arguably, it's hard to find a counterfactual in this day and age where that's not as true, because that's so much of both the cost and the driver for great companies versus mediocre ones. But so there's just an opportunity across the board, but that's a great way to look at it. But the other part of that statement is that word leverage, right? And understanding those inputs and effectively understanding the business, right? Recurring money, how does shareholder value accrue? What is this GM trying to do? And how does a talent play into that? You're talking about understanding the business fundamentals at a pretty deep level, which I'm not sure is something that's pretty common, let's say, amongst like HR professionals. I'm curious, is that an observation you share as well? How central do you think it is understanding the fundamentals, almost like GM or CEO of the business that you're in, is to be successful in HR?
I think it's improved dramatically over the course of my HR career. I left Michigan with my MBA in 2000. So over the course of the last 20 plus years, I've seen a dramatic shift. But I was fortunate enough to work for Brian McNamee, who was our CHRO at Amgen. And if the CEO, Kevin Scherer, and Brian were on the stage and you didn't know who they were and what their role were, what each role was, you wouldn't have been able to tell the CEO and the CHRO apart. They both spoke the language of the business in the same exact way. And that was an inspiration for me to make sure that I really understood the underlying business economics. But when HR people are sitting at the table, and this is one of the things also that's related to changing industries, you really truly have to understand that this is from Laffley's book, Playing to Win. But it's how I always enter an organization or work with my CEO to make sure that we have this in place. What does the strategy look like? What does it build it? What's the vision? Where are we going to play and where we're not going to play, but where we're going to play, the choices that you have, how are we going to win? And then HR plays an outsized role in key capabilities that we're going to build to make sure that we're going to win this way. So you better know the capabilities that are required to do that. An operating model, which is the who, how, when, and work gets done. And so it's more than just boxes and lines and org charts. It's roles, responsibilities, decision rights. It's incentive plans. It's how you mobilize the workforce. All those things are operating model. And lastly, culture. Laffley doesn't really talk about it that much. He didn't, it's like the last thing, he missed that one. But it's about execution. You put all that together. And so I think there's become an expectation that HR leaders, especially at the kind of VP executive level and up, truly understand the business. And I've noticed a substantial change in my career where it was more about, oh, make them feel good, as opposed to, you know, drive business outcomes. And so there's an expectation that if you're going to be an HR leader at the executive level, you better understand my business, because I need someone to help me build the right capabilities. And I need to make sure I have the right operating model that I can drive accountability in the organization. And oh, by the way, help me steward a culture by design, not by accident. And I need you to help me do that. So the business outcomes, but you need to know how we make money in order for us to make sure we build the ideal culture to do that. So all those things fit together. And that's how I apply it, because it's not the same playbook. You have to understand the industry and the company you're in, the vision, where we're going to play, how we're going to win. And then we have that responsibility to build key capabilities, operating model, and culture. And I'm seeing a lot more executives that I interface with that are thinking the same exact way. I think there's become an expectation, particularly because of the pandemic. I think it thrusts a lot of HR leaders into the forefront with expectations that we're going to solve some pretty complex problems during that period of time. And so that I think the role of the HR leader has changed a bit over the course of the last, accelerated maybe over the course of the last 4 years.
So on that topic, right? So of course, the pandemic has definitely shifted businesses and also the HR capabilities expectation. And I think it's safe to say we're past the pandemic directly at this point. Started here in late 2024. So what do you see as capabilities or expectations for HR that have evolved in during that time that are like here to stay?
It's interesting. One of the watchouts I'd have for HR leaders across the board is, don't think we've yet mastered hybrid. That's why I think we're seeing a lot of people go, everyone back to the office, right? I think there's still work to do from a capability perspective. Because again, if we're saying we're going to have a hybrid work environment, okay, what are the key capabilities required to have a hybrid work environment? And what are the great training solutions and development solutions to manage a dispersed workforce effectively? And are you really driving that in the organization and holding managers, leaders, or, you know, people, they don't want to be managed, they want to be led. How are you leading your remote work environment so that you're still going to adhere to the culture that you have that has made you successful and have it tied to the dominant culture and then allow some subculture in those functions that might be hybrid? You have to think about these things. And I think we've stopped short. We solved a lot of big problems during the pandemic and hybrid and remote working. But I think there's a lot more we can do to make sure that this is sustainable going forward and people don't start reverting to everyone get butts and chairs again. Butts and chairs didn't mean you were going to be productive. I mean, it had nothing to do with it. It had to be about outcomes. But how are you measuring outcomes if it's a real easy role to measure those outcomes? It was the same problem when we were in the office, but it's a lot harder to do when you're doing it hybrid. How do you keep those personal connections? We need to do a lot more development and training on that. We're taking that on ourselves because we're starting to become a little more hybrid and remote. Mm-hmm. Caliber is an 1800 location. So the thought was right during the pandemic, they brought everyone back. I wasn't here at this company then. They brought everyone back to the office. So there was no real hybrid, but as we've grown, access to talent is a little bit better when you can have some hybrid and remote opportunities. And so now I'm at that point where I'm saying, okay, we need to make sure we're teaching our leaders how to actually manage in this remote work environment. And I think that's really helpful. Second thing I'd say to close on the pandemic piece is the understanding employee well-being, isolation, those sorts of things. And I think you do have to think about that in your benefit plans to ensure that you have a well-being initiative so that it's not just about keeping costs down and making sure people are under care of a primary care physician, but offering them the connectivity to the company and also to their behavioral health experts, if you can afford to put that into your program, finding a way to increase the capability there, because I do think people can have a tendency to feel isolated if you don't have a great program internal to the company that's keeping people connected and then have access to some healthcare opportunities for them as well.
So earlier you talked about for any of these programs, especially I think we were talking about training and onboarding and getting people to productivity, connected and just, you know, functionally productive, whether in a hybrid or in-person kind of environment, and especially for these multi-unit businesses that you've been engaged with, how important that is. Could you tell me about how do you translate that vision, that desire to, at scale, ensure that every person, their skill set and their training is maximized to actually having an HR department drive that successfully?
It's twofold. If I look at it from an operations perspective, building the business case around helping every teammate reach their full potential, where you can show reduction in turnover or profitability. Maybe a quick example is we have well over 1,000 apprentices in this industry on the body technician side. And because we don't have enough body technicians, demand exceeds supply of those roles. A lot of them have aged out because people have kind of moved away from trades and now they're swinging back to the pendulum to trades, but we're still early days in that. So we have a lot of apprentices, but when they graduate, they're about 60% as productive of an experienced body technician. These are hard roles. Every accident's different. There's a wide variety of different vehicles. There's different of material types, and there's EVs that have emerged. There's emerging technology on how to fix these things. This is a really complicated role. So it does take 12 or 18 months just to be able to be a standalone body technician. But how do you get them, if they're only 60% productive, how do you close that gap to 100%? And that does take some time, but you have to have a program in place in order to do that. But if you can shift someone from 60% to 80% productive more quickly, that's just, that flow through to the bottom line is dramatic for at scale. So you put the business case together to say, we should invest in a postgraduate program that's going to allow us to actually accelerate that move from 60% productivity to 80% productivity. Instead of taking 3 years, it's going to take a year and a half. You can actually monetize that. You can actually give a direct ROI to the investment, because that flow through of productivity within a center is really dramatic. So you got to build the business case on those things, and then you get the investment so that you can put the people in place. Because we did have to build a training team here, which we did over the course of the last year. And we brought people in from the field into the training program that already understood collision. It's been really successful in the early days, and we're driving a lot more capability. But we were able to demonstrate why the investment was going to be important, because we saw turnover go down. We saw productivity go up. All these things are net positive. On the HR side, we participate in all those things. We have to build to help build the good business case. But I do expect my HR business partners to be held accountable to the success of the centers in which they have they're under their area of responsibility. So the same metrics that a regional manager or regional vice president might have on profitability, on turnover, I expect in productivity from the C to B tech. I really want them to be, that's shared accountability. I don't have something else like, how many investigations did you do? I'm actually going to hold you accountable to the performance of that region. And I want to see them move forward, particularly in a multi-unit. I direct the HR business partners to focus on those centers that are struggling. So a key metric might be, look, I want to see 80% of the centers in your area of responsibility make or exceed their bonus opportunity. Because you can have a region succeed because they've been driving the top three performers or top 10 performers. And so the region overall makes their number, but 40% of the general managers didn't make their bonus. And so that's not an effective organization, because if you drive your HR business partners to that left side of the curve and they approve their performance and they go from the fifth quintile to the fourth and the fourth goes to the third, the entire mean of the business changes. And I want my HR business partners focused on helping those centers and how they can actually add value there, because that's true business value. You unlock it. Don't spend your time in the top centers where maybe they want more attention. You can tell them that they're doing great, but it's really HR business partners should be held accountable to the ultimate business results of the region that they're responsible for. So that gets them invested in what they can do at the center level to drive better performance.
That's interesting, because it's like HR business partners in this case is like a secondary point of leverage, because you have the GMs and the trainers and the managers directly in every place that's creating their own culture to help increase productivity and make sure people are feeling their best and doing their best. But then if you have outcomes with variability, like you mentioned, where there's some all-stars in a couple of centers, Now you haven't created the overall system, right, that you're trying to like work on. No matter where you are in caliber, there's like a certain way that people do work. And that's the focus, or that secondary point of leverage that the HR business partner can be focused on. You're already starting to get into this a little bit, but we've talked about how important it is for the HR function to be really aligned with and understanding the business and how important it is. And you've seen that importance grow, right, for HR leadership in general. So for the HR team that you're leading, how do you help emphasize that importance? We've talked a lot about how HR can impact the business and overall, but then how can we instill the right kind of learnings and lessons and business orientation for HR leaders of the future?
I've seen it improve over the years of where at the executive level, where again, I do believe that there's an expectation now that the HR business leaders are going to understand the business. They're going to be a business person first, HR person second. I think that's becoming more common for sure over the course of my career. But I take it upon myself as a leader and expect my direct reports to do the same. But I role model the importance of being a business person first, HR person second, every time I get in front of the organization. So whether it be quarterly town halls or my huddles that I do every 6 weeks or so, where I'm talking about the business first and I speak the language of the business and I talk to them about, look, understand how we make money. What are the things that we do that drives our bottom line results? And then what do you do that helps to impact? And even if you're a payroll analyst, you're critically important to the organization more than you actually know, because we need to pay people correctly and on time every week, over 30,000 people. And we have some complex pay plans that we have to make sure that those are paid correctly. And okay, why is this pay plan designed the way it is? So that you understand what you're doing when you're inputting the information and making sure that it's correct, and how not getting these things correct in the execution, what that can do to profitability of the organization. And I'll give them this example. If a body technician leaves the organization, it's well over $50,000 in revenue a month that shop now doesn't have, and well over $150,000 of profit a year. So it's critically important for you to make sure that you are doing your job, because it's so critically important. We got to pay them correctly and on time, and you're a key cog in that. So emphasizing like what that impact is, I think is important, and it happens over a period of time. There are some trainings that I've done in prior companies. We haven't gotten to that just yet on finance for non-finance managers, so they can understand some of the basics around a P&L. But speaking the language of the business and being very transparent about our performance and what levers are pulled has been really helpful at last company, at this company, makes a difference. And I find people are really interested in it. If they've never been talked to in a way that like is educating them on the operating model and the business dynamics that we're facing, they find that actually interesting and have a sense of pride, especially when we're winning like we are here, which is a great place to be. That gets them excited about learning even more. So I do think it's important to educate everyone in the organization. It helps build a great organizational muscle. So when you put your priorities together, you're really driving to the strategic priorities of the organization.
So if you look ahead then, David, what do you think are some of the key forces and trends that are going to be shaping the future of HR? And also, how might you and HR professionals respond to that and think about their careers and what they're doing over the next coming years?
I do think technology is going to become ever more important. And I'd like HR to understand better that if you have a bad technology solution, it's likely that you have a bad process. The technology enables the process. And so I think there should be, as technology becomes more and more important, you can't run your business, but IT's on the critical path of everything. But really having the understanding that you have to design the process, there's an as is and to be, and then the technology is going to enable that process. So I think process orientation to ensure that technology actually is as effective as it could possibly be, I think is one trend that needs to take. The HR as a whole needs to be more focused on. I think AI is interesting. I think it's going to take some time, especially with the larger enterprises, because we're probably already running some technology that they tell us that we're going to get some AI here sometime soon. And I think if you're a smaller business, smaller enterprise, adopting some AI capabilities to manage menial tasks, help look over payroll so that you have check, you don't have to have manual checks, so you can do a lot with making sure that you don't make errors. Payroll errors are a real problem at large enterprises. But adopt some of those things early, I think, is really good. And then if you're at the larger enterprises, experiment with AI, large language models is an example I'll give, where I could see that really helping to improve the training of the organization as a whole, because you can have just-in-time answers. If I look back on my prior company, we weren't doing AI there, but I can see the application from a training perspective to technicians who are out in the field, and we're trying to figure out what is this particular pest that I've seen. I've never seen this pest. What is a German cockroach? How do I handle this? What are the proper treatments? What are the chemicals? Do I have them in my truck? If you could ask that to a large language model that has everything uploaded from local and state laws that prohibit the use of certain chemicals on certain days. If it's raining, you can't actually use that chemical on the outside. There are things that all that's loaded in, and you can actually pull that out, that it de-skills the job to a degree that it can be more effective, and the teammate feels that they're more successful at their job and allows them to make more money, frankly. But training changes, And HR should see that as a big opportunity. We should be exploring those things as much as humanly possible because that enables the front line. So I think AI has a big opportunity there. When you talk about the large enterprise systems, I think we need to start thinking about AI as an overlay. If you have an ERP that is bundled with LMS and your applicant tracking system, but you want a better interface for your LMS, you might have to find the money to set aside as you put your plan together to further invest in an overlay to that LMS. Because you have a bundle, you're not going to be able to break that LMS out probably in a large enterprise system and really try to keep you hooked. So if you want a better user experience and you want to actually take something to the next level and utilize AI, you can draw from some of the content that you have there. But how do you create an overlay for that and an interface? And AI, I think, can have a breakthrough there for the for those of us who are in larger organizations. So I think those two things on technology are critically important. And then lastly would be, there is a big trend to be a business person first, HR person second. If you can't sit at the table and speak the language of the business, we kept saying in the old days, 20 years ago, oh, I want a seat at the table. Oh, okay. Now you can't have one if you don't know your way around the P&L. You just can't, not at the VP or up level. You just lose all credibility. So you really do have to understand the underlying dynamics of the business. And that's a trend I don't think will stop.
Interesting. And for the HR leaders of the future, is that possible through staying in various roles? Obviously, there's a tons of subspecialty, right, that you can really become an expert in within payroll and compensation or recruiting or training, as you mentioned, any number of things. It sounds like your background has been a little bit more general management-esque, right, with the kinds of things that you've done previously before you then got into HR. I wonder if in the future you'll see a lot more people coming into HR leadership later in their career or into the HR function. It's almost like it's like a finishing as opposed to a starting role.
I have seen that. I think it's interesting. If you have highly capable people, like Mary Barra, everyone kind of talks about herself because she was the CHRO and then she was a CEO, but she jumped into that job and then jumped to the CEO jobs. I do think talent management, talent development, understanding leadership, it is critically important. And so if you've done that in your career somewhere else and then hopped onto the head of HR job or something like that. I think if you have strong capabilities underneath you, very capable people, I think it's possible. I would argue the best CHROs I've interacted with or seen, some of them mentored in at maybe the director level into HR, but they also had a wide variety of experiences before they became the CHRO. One of the best bosses I ever had, Lori Johnston, who I worked for at Celanese and at Amgen. I worked for her at Amgen before I left. We left, but she was like, she just recently retired, but she joined after doing a multitude of roles at Dell. She moved from finance and she was in project management too, into HR. And then she had to learn a bunch in HR. And then she moved up in HR, but she still had to have this broad foundation. Like, how did HR really work? She was incredibly inquisitive and really tried to understand every element and then made herself really relevant there too. She wasn't a long-term incentive expert or a comp expert. So what did she do? She went and interfaced with the best comp experts in the country. And she made sure we hired a great comp expert so that she supplemented her own skills. So even if she entered in late, she still needed to build a foundation, and then she had to accelerate that. And she accelerated that not by learning in role, but by in part learning by role in role, but like finding other people on the outside that could actually accelerate her own development. And so if someone does enter into this function a little bit later, you're still going to have to do the work, because I don't think I can run my function effectively unless I really do understand how it all fits together. And I think Lori would probably agree with me on that one.
Surrounding yourself, creating that team of complementary skill sets so that then together you have a great function, and also you're personally learning from each other in that process. So then shifting back to the technology observations then that you just made, you talked about how there's this big potential, but it's almost like this different layer that you could think of. And then with the Terminix example, I think of the AI application, that's almost just like workforce engagement, right? It's not even so much an HR kind of thing. It's just like how you're working and like how you're solving problems, in this case, in the field, is just maybe like shifting the way you're training and could have an aspect, and the HR team could impact that. So if that's true, I guess specifically with training, because that seems to be an area that you're passionate about? What are you seeing in the near term? Are there things you're experimenting with, or things that you've seen some interesting like results from on the training front with newer things that you've either tried, or what are you planning to try? Because I think a lot of the folks listening, right, they're planning to try, right, or planning for experimental budget to see where you can make an impact. So any specific ideas?
So a couple, again, it does go in the large language models, or you know, the GPTs of the world is probably the easiest button on this right now, because there's just a lot of applicability across the board where you can simplify a rule. Again, I'd apply the same principles here, but just talking about any multi-unit, it's not necessarily here, but it will be here. If you have 70 reports that you expect your GM to access to understand how to run their center or their branch, each one is different, and where they are, like, you got to get this metric from this area, you need to get this one from this one, and how do I solve this problem? I don't know. I have a liquid cost per hour issue in my center. How do I fix that? But you can go on ChatGPT right now and actually say, I have a liquid cost per hour problem in my collision center. How do I fix it? And it's going to give you 10 general approaches. But if you have the Caliber way or the Terminix way of press management, or any company, right, your company Danaher way of doing things, then that can be loaded in so that you're getting the specific way that you want your organization to handle that problem and solve that problem. And it's a massive improvement to what we're doing now, because there's turnover, that people are new in their role, and these roles are complex. How do you de-complex that area of responsibility so you can focus them on value creation, which oftentimes is interfacing with the customer and the people in the center, making sure that your technicians feel valued? Are you managing the flow in the center? By allowing them to get access to answers quickly, that's why I think it's really important for us to lean in on some of these things, because that exists, and it exists pretty well today. But we could also see the ability to do virtual estimating that gets you to a certain degree of proficiency quickly, where you've written 80% or more of the estimate through AI that's through the camera. And then you as an individual needs to make sure that it's correct, so that, you know, the insurance carriers have a level of comfort that you're writing an accurate estimate. You're not overwriting, but you certainly don't want to underwrite either. I could see that being an application, same kind of way, using photo for the pest management industry, where it's like, you couple that with a large language model. I have a German cockroach. They identify it, your AI identifies it as a German cockroach. And then it right away translates that into, this is how you're going to deal with it the Terminix way, right? As opposed to going out to the known universe of actions and results, and just having, this is how we expect you to do it for our company, so you can deliver that consistent customer experience. And that is a people-driven initiative. We would be working closely with central operations here, as well as our IT team, to make sure that we're rolling this out, we're communicating it effectively, and we're teaching people how to use it so that they go there first to help them get their answers to their questions. This is where I think we are going as a function, to make sure that we're helping to deliver on our promise and helping every teammate reach their full potential, and thereby the business. Because that's really what happens. People are the only two that have advantage. So,
yeah, you're just enabling them, and you already have been, right? We have been with trainings and classes and in-person or virtual trainings or documentations or PDFs saying, here is the 500-page document of the Terminix way, right?
Oh my God.
Well, exactly.
Get the answer immediately. Right. And it's just in time. It's just in time learning. It's really fantastic. So obviously we all learn better on the job. So you get some classroom training and we have some follow-up for that. But it really is trying to drive that just in time. I can continue to learn. I'm going to move faster because I actually have this confidence. It's going to take me an hour to look it up. And now I finally answer in 15 seconds. That's powerful. Right. Really powerful.
Like 20 years ago, when it was like a skill to learn how to Google, and some people knew how to do that versus not, I think there's probably a generic skill of just being able to interact with AI system, which can at scale be a competitive advantage, at least for a little bit. But then the other nugget there is, I think if you can take that further to your own proprietary way of doing business, so kind of to having your trained model that is delivering that just in time, that's a big potential, or at least for the way that you're running your business, for your processes, you're delivering just-in-time answers to get people back to what they need to be doing versus searching for answers. It's a big opportunity.
You're right. And actually something you mentioned that I think is really important too, because I think there is an element of training, again, that you do have to train a little bit on how to write a prompt. And that can be really hard at scale if you're having 15,000 people access something to get the right answer. But what we're seeing is that there's a couple of companies out there that have really de-skilled the prompts where you're going to get a better answer. And there's some that aren't. The early kind of phases of testing some things. How do I write a total loss nationwide? And then it comes back. There is no nationwide standard. We're talking about nationwide insurance, not a nationwide standard. So it's confused. So that'll be the evolution of this. Some companies get really good at it so that all of our workforce, it meets them where they are. So they don't have to be an expert on writing prompts. That's going to help a lot, I think, for this industry, not just us, because I think we're the industry leader. As we improve, the industry will come along with us. We saw that in other industries. And I think we'll see it in ours too. That's a big responsibility. We love being where we are, and we're going to continue to drive to those things without a doubt. But technology is going to have to evolve. It's going to have to meet our workers where they are. Frontline teammates need a simple solution. And they didn't go to school to be a quantum prompt writer. They're amazing at fixing cars, like amazing. They can take a vehicle apart mechanically included and put the whole thing back together and it looks perfect. It's pretty crazy. It's a pretty inspiring industry. These folks are really good at their job.
Yeah. And so this technology just needs to meet that same criteria, which you said, so how do you take an apprentice and turn them into a master as quickly as possible? So if this thing is good enough to get you answers fast and it's accurate and it's in natural language, and there's huge potential for just changing the way and it really across industries or just how people get trained and onboarded.
Another two that we haven't talked about yet, but virtual reality. I went and spent some time at the apprentice school out in Virginia where they're building ships, and they have an amazing school too. But just to learn more so that if it could apply to our apprentice program, and they had a virtual welding machine, and we had a couple of former techs that are in our apprentice program that put the VR on and tested the welding. And they were like, it's amazing. And then you have grades on how well they welded. Welding is a big thing for us. If you can become a master welder, you become a B-Tech really quickly, right? So that's actually a skill that's really important in this industry. And if there was a way to have a virtual welding machine so you're not burning true materials and it's a realistic experience. And I painted my first car door at that school because they have a painting capability too. So they had a car door, put it on, car doors right in front of me. I have the spray gun. And it rated my speed, it rated my overspray, it rated all the things I need to do to become a master painter, and all virtually without wasting a single drop of paint. And how can we accelerate that too so that our B painters become A painters? Because that's a very technically savvy. They can mix paint and have only paint half the hood and you can't even tell that they did it. They're really skilled painters. It's really fascinating too. But if we could do a lot of that virtually, where we have a mobile unit, you can actually see in regions where we have density, we could actually accelerate the performance through VR as well. And so that's another great training tool that we should be looking at as an HR function out in these trade organizations.
I feel like a common thread here where, David, your role is like HR, but a lot of these examples that you're bringing in are truly about workforce enablement. So just this is the thing they need to do their job. And often there's like a line between the operators and the GMs or the folks in the business versus what HR is enabling through training, which is like just a general understanding of who we are, our values. And here's some stories about like our history. But actually, when we're talking about training here, you're talking about getting you all the way into productivity in the role, which I think maps to the broader thesis about being really intertwined with the business and what the business needs. And this, we're just now talking about how technology can enable that, which is another layer to it.
I appreciate that. That's what I'm mostly passionate about, I guess, more of an operator HR, but all the other things that are so important. We are building a leader model here as well, because that one, we don't have one that's embedded. And we hired a fantastic leader from Lowe's who helped build their leader model there. And now he's here to help us build a leader model, because executive leadership development is something we want to make sure that we have a bench that continues to grow the capabilities, the behaviors that we want to hold people accountable to. And all those things remain vitally important. We're an operational company. So you do have to certainly be thinking field first in an industry like ours. But all the other things, the traditional things, now that we're at scale, we really do need some of those things effective performance management, meaning, you know, not performance improvement plans, but that too, but like just helping people. We do have a 9-box and talent management. We have a lot of those things that are technology enabled, and we'll get better and better at those things because we do want to be a leadership engine as well as a great operating company. So those things are important. I just tend to really get passionate about enabling the front line. Servant leadership is critically important in this industry because it's all really about them.
Yeah, I get it. So without further ado, are we ready to get into the lightning round, David?
You bet.
Let's do it. What's a piece of career advice that you received that stuck with you?
Other than learn or grow, I do think probably the best advice that I ever got was go slow, not go fast. It really was. Just get that broad base. Don't be impatient. Don't panic early. That was one of them, which was like, if you're a test pilot, when do you panic? The second upon impact. Because if you panic any earlier, you're not going to make good decisions. You're definitely going to die. So don't panic early in your career. Be patient.
If you could automate one HR task that you just don't have to ever do again or have your team do again, what would that be?
Honestly, my payroll team might be frustrated. It's just payroll because it's so hard and it's so complicated. They do such a great job. It's the least favorite. It's just thankless. And so I love them. If you find a great payroll manager or payroll leader, pay them well and keep them because it's such an important part. But if it was all automated, you never have to worry about it ever. Yeah, that would be pretty great. Because if you can't pay people correctly on time, you shouldn't be a business.
Fair. So what's a book, podcast, resource that has had a big impact on you this year or in the last few years?
Playing to Win by Laffley was a big one for me because we even used it here. So we used a vision when we set our strategy shortly after myself, a CEO joined a couple months after I did. We set that together as a team, the vision, where we're going to play, how we're going to win. And then we set the 5-year plan. And then you can use that within your own function. You can use that as a business partner with others that map, because not everyone is strategic. This helps to give them a framework to actually build a strategy. And those that are strategic oftentimes can't communicate their strategy. They think everyone just gets it. And then that just provides the discipline to pull them along. So that one's a big one. And then the 5th discipline by Peter Senge, that one goes back to process and understanding the importance of a learning organization. That one's been pretty foundational for me, pretty influential on how I think about the business.
If you could improve one aspect of HR overnight across the world, what would it be?
Wow, that's a good question. Honestly, it'd probably be the capability of the learning management systems that, especially for those of us in multi-unit, there's just such a huge opportunity to have a better user interface and make it really easy to badge and to know who's winning and know who's getting their things done, and having micro-learning and gamification and all the things that you can do. It just creates a really fun experience. We answer these quizzes all the time. You see them in the back of a Uber where you're like, all of a sudden you start participating in the quiz. You can do that with your business, but we don't have that capability very easily ready for us. And it'd be great. I think a lot of HR leaders would probably agree with me because learning is so important to better performance.
Absolutely. With all that said, thank you for the wonderful conversation, David. So that's a wrap for today's episode of Future Proof HR. Huge thank you once again, David Dart, for sharing your incredible insights on your career and where this is all headed. So until next time, folks, bye now. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slack bot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.